Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
And as the bongos fade out, we welcome you back to the jungle as we say hello. And I don't know how to start podcasts, even though we've been doing this for 2 years. I'm Adrian, and I welcome you to the Wild Wild Podcast, and joined by my jungle companion, Rod Barnett. Hi, Rod.
Hello. It's nice to be back in the sweaty jungle, considering the weather outside.
I know, right? It's absolutely freezing. Yeah, sorry this has been a bit of a long gap between jungle adventures. I'm sure people have just been desperate to know what's going to happen in the next jungle film. Is it going to be about a girl who survived a plane crash and then grew to be a beautiful jungle girl?
Oh, surely not.
Or not. I mean, we'll put people out of their misery soon enough. But before we do that, is there? I just wanted to mention my couple of things that I've got going on. Have you got anything that you want to plug that's coming out that you, or anything like that? As has become our tradition, is to plug stuff before we.
True. I don't really have. I mean, the latest episode of The Bloody Pit is out, which is me and Troy Howarth talking about the 1965 version of Ten Little Indians. Our annual Christmas episode that I do with my regular podcasting partner Troy Gwynn and John Hudson will be covering A Christmas Horror Story, the 2015 film. We're going to be talking about that anthology horror film this time around. That will be out hopefully the week before Christmas, he says, with fingers crossed, knowing how much time it takes to edit these things. That's really all I've got going for new shows or new things being presented to the public that I can think of off the top of my head right now.
Very good. Yeah. I was excited last week to receive a copy of the new UHD Blu-ray restoration of Mark of the Devil by Vinegar Syndrome. That is my first on-camera appearance in a Blu-ray extra. So very pleased to have been able to produce something for that. So that's out now. If anybody wants to see what I look like in full flow, sitting in my classroom, what was weird making that was I had to shoot it and edit it and record it and just do it. I produced the whole thing myself back in the summer holidays. So really? I just had to set it. Yeah. So I just set the camera up in the classroom, lit it all, and then I had to pretend I was being interviewed. Basically, I had to speak to an imaginary interviewer. And that was quite fun. But anyway, so that's out now, and you can watch it and just see if you can tell that there was nobody else in the room, or if I managed to convince people that I'm having a hilarious chat with somebody else. But the good thing about sort of getting involved with Vinegar Syndrome is, of course, you know, they're always producing all kinds of old crap.
Oh, this is true, yeah.
So already I am next weekend shooting another extra for an as yet unannounced film. So I can't say what it is, but it's one I'm particularly excited about, and I have a rather unique opportunity to give them a pretty good bonus feature for an upcoming Italian film. So hopefully in the new year when that gets announced, because this is very last minute. I only found out they were doing it like a few days ago, so it's quickly something that I can just squeeze in before their window, production window, closes. So hopefully it'll be announced in January, but I'm very excited to be doing that. So yeah, all systems go.
Cool.
Which is fun. And I optioned to get paid in Blu-rays, so a massive box arrived from Vinegar Syndrome last week, which was cool. So my Forgotten Jelly box sets are now completely up to date.
Ah, those are fun. Those are fun, of course.
Yeah, I don't know when I'll... Oh, there are just so many films. But anyway, so yeah, I'll tell you more about that when I've got more news on that. But we are, of course, in our last film of this... mini season, I feel like it's taken us about 6 months. But it's a mini season... nonetheless, and we've reached the end, I think the end of our list of films, and also pretty much the end of the genre in the form as it was that we've been looking at it, the sort of brief flurry of Jungle Girl movies in 1968 and 69. And this was pretty much the last one, although the star of this film did make another sort of appearance as a Jungle Girl type character in a film a couple of years later. But anyway, we are, of course, today talking about a film with a couple of good titles. Depending on which, or depending on where you look, it's either Tarzana the Wild Woman or Tarzana the Wild Girl. The Italian title, I should say, is Tarzano Sesso Selvaggio, which basically translates as Tarzana Wild Sex. So,
would that be wild gender more appropriately, or?
I don't know, just wild sex.
Okay.
There wow. It is. I know. I mean, there isn't really, as far as I remember.
No, there's a lot less sex in this film than in some previous entries in this subgenre. Yeah. But yeah.
Although, loads more boobs.
Yes. The nudity starts immediately under the credits. I mean, it's,
yeah.
This, if you have any interest in seeing Femi Benussi, is that, am I pronouncing her last name correctly?
Probably.
Probably. If you have any interest in seeing her naked, this is your movie. Wow. I mean, because I don't know. Yeah. I think there may be a few scant seconds of her on screen time in which she's mildly covered, but it's rare.
She puts some clothes on, but her pet chimpanzee, he orders her to take them off straight away.
I know. He gives a shake of the head like, no, that doesn't.
Yeah, like, no. So this is not particularly well known, this film. That I found it hard to get any decent reviews. I couldn't find any contemporary reviews at all. The film was released in Italy. It was not released in the UK. It was released in America, but I couldn't find any contemporary American reviews at all.
And it wasn't released in America until the mid-70s.
Yeah, so I don't know, but I couldn't find any reviews for it. I looked in all the usual places, but... So it was obviously just a bit of a grindhouse film. It's available to watch on what is possibly the only surviving print, which was in the collection of Something Weird Video. And this was a print that has been through the projector many times.
Yeah. And it's sometimes a pretty rough print.
There's a
real change that I think is that shows evidence of there being an entire scene at least partially missing.
Yeah. And at times I'm wondering if it's even in the right order. I mean, it's not always that easy to tell. But yeah, it's what I do like occasionally seeing prints like this where, you know, it would have been shot on Eastman color, and Eastman color famously fades pink.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going a bit pink. I mean, there's very little, because there's a lot of stock footage, and there was very little attempt when the film was produced in the first place to match the color between the stock footage and the newly shot footage anyway. So the colors are all over the place, plus half of it's gone pink. And there's also scratches and occasional pen marks where they've kind of put X's on the thing and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, if you want that real grindhouse experience, you're going to get it with this one. You can find it to watch online. It's available to watch on the streaming platform Cult Picks, if anyone subscribes to Cult Picks. But it is this Something Weird print. There's nothing better that I could find. But nonetheless, it was, you know, it's watchable and it's pretty entertaining. I wanted to start our discussion with my favorite review, which is on Letterboxd. Somebody said that it's basically in quotation marks, "I've got a mountain of stock footage, a guy who specializes in dubbing chimpanzees, and a weekend pass to the zoo. Who wants to make an exploitation movie?" And I think, yep, that's basically it.
Sign up some actors and go to town.
Yeah. Go to the zoo now. it's hilarious how she's got this pet chimpanzee, and the dubbing for this chimpanzee is just being done by some guy that, you know, looping and not sounding at all convincing as a chimpanzee is very funny.
But are you trying to tell me that there are sounds emanating from this chimpanzee that aren't actually chimpanzee noises? Sir, I am insulted.
I know, it's hard to believe, but yeah, it's pretty funny. So let's start by saying that this film is another by the our friend of the podcast, Guido Malatesta.
Yeah.
Who is a returning director, because, of course, I think he directed our last film, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Which means
he was the director of Samoa.
He became, I'm guessing for some reason, he was kind of a go-to guy all of a sudden in 1968 or 69 for making these kinds of films.
And unfortunately, he died just a year after making this movie, and he was only 51, which is a real shame. And his name, of course, I didn't think about this until after we recorded last time, but Malatesta basically means headache. So his name is Guy Headache, which made me laugh a lot when I realized that Malatesta. I had to buy paracetamol when I was in Rome last summer. And so I had to explain that I had a headache. And yeah, it's basically Malatesta. There you go. So it's a great name for a director. We've got a few other returning cast members here. We've mentioned Femi Benussi. I keep doing that. Benussi. not Buscemi. Femi Benussi. I've been looking around trying to find any information I could about Femi Benussi. And apart from the list of all the films she was in and the fact that she was born in what is now Croatia but was part of Italy at the time. So she is Italian.
Mm-hmm.
I can't find anything out about her at all. She's apparently still alive. She's in her mid to late 70s now, but I can't find anything. I don't know where she is, what she's been doing for the last 40 years.
Yeah, that's sad. I was kind of hoping that you might have run across something, because I couldn't find anything myself. And considering some of the movies that she was in, I'm hoping that I was really hoping there was some kind of at least mildly retrospective interview with her, because, I mean, she was in so many interesting movies. It's kind of frustrating. I mean, you know, we talked on here about Killer Must Kill Again, but, you know, uh-huh. Stranger and the Gunfighter and Bloodsucker Leads the Dance, and it's just Bloody Pit of Horror, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Oh, and don't forget Super Sexy Market, 1979.
That one had slipped my mind. How did that happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, she's done nearly 90 movies. It's the kind of person, maybe somebody like Eugenio Ercolani. Ercolani. That guy, who seems to interview everybody for all the Blu-ray extras these days. Maybe he could track her down.
Fingers crossed.
But I couldn't find any evidence that she's ever been interviewed about her career at all. I mean, she's even in, you know, stuff like Hatchet for the Honeymoon.
Yes.
And
Strip Nude for Your Killer, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she started out when she was 19 in Bloody Pit of Horror, which obviously is a film very close to your heart.
Yes, this is true.
So, yeah, it's a shame, really. I really would like to know something about her, but basically all I can find out is that she was beautiful and she had a photo taken a lot and she did loads of movies. That's it. So, it's a bit of a shame. But, so if anyone out there knows anything more about her, I'd be really interested to know because, she's a bit of a mystery. But nice to... what's interesting here is that she's got the starring role, but when you look at the poster for Tarzana, Sesso Selvaggio, her name is not even in the three main cast names. She's, like, tucked down the bottom.
Yeah, I know.
But also the image of the poster is two women, one black, one white, and the white girl has blonde hair, and they're both in their sort of jungle pants made of leaves.
Yeah, jungle thongs.
Jungle thongs and no bras. But neither of them is Tarzana.
No, they're the other two female main characters of the film. Yeah.
There are three women in this film. One of them, her name is in the name of the film, but she's not on the poster.
Well, I mean, it may... That may tie in to the fact that, I mean, the primary characters of the story don't even spot the Tarzana, the jungle girl, until an hour and 5 minutes into the movie. As viewers, we have spent plenty of time with her, but she's not the main cast until over an hour into the picture.
No, she's there's barely any interaction at all. So the other two women, let's mention them as we've already sort of teased that. There are two other women on the poster. And the first one is, well, I suppose we should...
We could go left to right, or it depends on maybe screen time. We should defer.
So we should probably briefly explain what the film is about. So then these two women make sense. So it's again, plane crash, baby girl survived, has now grown up to be a beautiful woman. That's the gist of it. And the surviving family from England want to go and track her down. So there's a woman whose name is Doris. And she has come out here to the jungle to find her. And she's got a man called Glenn, who is a great white hunter, played by Ken Clark. And then also another guy who works with her called Groda, who has his own secret side quest that we'll talk about later. So anyway, so that's why Doris is here. So she is the beautiful blonde who also is unafraid to... go naked in the waterfall shower, as we've seen in previous films. Although she doesn't get her clothes stolen this time, which
true.
I can't remember which film that was. Was that Gangala? Maybe.
I think that was actually the last one we covered. It's firmer in my memory, and I think that means that it was recent.
Well, like you would forget the scene otherwise.
Well, good point.
So this, she's played by an actress called Franca Polesello, who only just died quite recently, actually, 2021. But again, no information at all. I don't know anything about her, other than to say that she is just another person who did loads of great movies.
True.
She's in some Peplum films. She's in a Toto comedy. She's in Mission Bloody Mary, so she is in another Ken Clark film.
Mm-hmm.
Navajo Joe. She's in the Euro spy film LSD, which I've been thinking, actually, I was going to run this by you offline, but we could just do it on here. Thinking ahead of future mini-seasons, and I was thinking of doing an LSD mini-season.
Oh, could we find? Where, well, how?
Yeah,
there's definitely there are at least that's a subgenre to play around. Yeah, with. That's true. Yeah,
there's at least three or four Italian films that deal with LSD. So maybe we'll come back to LSD, the Eurospy version. But yeah. Oh, and she's in a Robin Hood film, which I wondered whether that was one you might have come across before.
Yeah, Robin Hood, the Invincible Archer. There, that's from 1970s, one of the last films that she did. And I have to say, I might have run across this one. I looked at some images from it, but I'll be honest, I'm not sure if I've seen that one or not. If the world were the way I want it to be, it would be very easy for me to line up all of the Robin Hood films made by Italian exploitation people in the 60s and 70s and just go through them methodically. But the thing about this one that makes me think that I may have tried really hard to seek it out is it was directed by a Spanish director, which means that I probably had another reason to kind of try to seek this one out. But I don't know. I will say this: if I haven't seen it, my goal would be to eventually see it. And the guy who wrote and directed that particular Robin Hood film, he wrote Tarzan and King Solomon's Mines in 1973, which has some Nashi connections, and Scream of the Demon Lover, which is a Spanish gothic of some note, well worth seeing. Mm-hmm. Now available on Blu-ray. So there are some things that make me think that I probably did seek this out when I was taking a run through as many of the Stranger Robin Hood films. I just don't have strong memories of it. He directed Nashi in the film called The Hanging Woman, which is also known by a number of other titles as well. So
cool. The other woman on the poster is the character of Kamala, who is a local, that they find a tribe in the jungle, and Kamala has knowledge of where they might find this mysterious goddess, because Tarzana is another one who's become like a kind of goddess to the local people. So Kamala is played by Beryl Cunningham, who was an actress originally from Jamaica, and then she came to London to study and then ended up becoming a dancer and appearing in quite a few films, actually. Beryl Cunningham. She had a sort of interesting career for about 20 years, primarily in Italy, as well as Tarzana. She was in a few Peplum films early on, things like The Slave Merchants. But you'd more likely to know her from something like So Sweet, So Perverse, or Black Decameron. She was in that one. She's in, a bit later on, she's in Island of the Fishmen.
Yes, indeed.
And then according to this, we've seen her before, because her last credited film is Exterminators of the Year 3000.
Which we talked about a good while back, yeah.
I think we liked that one, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She definitely. Also, around that time, she also became a regular guest on the Italian program Playboy di Mezzanotte, or Playboy at Night, Mezzanotte. I think that means evening. Anyway. A Playboy. My Italian is really. I should know this by now. So she was a regular guest on a Playboy show on Italian TV. She also published a book of Jamaican aphrodisiac recipes in 1981. I know, but more excitingly, given that this is an audio medium, she did record a hit record. Well, I say hit. Let's assume it was a hit. It's relatively collectible now. She made a record in 1978 called Wyo, which is on Discogs, is under the genre of electronic funk and Latin soul. And that, which ticks a lot of boxes for me, I have to say. So here is a little extract of Beryl Cunningham's Wyo. We'll be right back. Pretty funky stuff, I have to admit.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah, I'd not heard that before. Good.
Yeah, and it's got a sort of jungle vibe. It's got lots of bongos in it and stuff like that. So, yeah, I always like it when I discover that one of our cast has recorded some kind of disco record, which it seems to have happened quite a lot, actually, on this podcast.
Strangely enough, yes.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's Beryl Cunningham. Again, I don't really know anything about her once she retired. But she died again just a couple of years ago. I think she basically spent the rest of her life in Italy after appearing in quite a lot of fun and interesting movies. So those are the two women on the poster, and we've also mentioned obviously Femi Benussi, who spends most of the movie a bit like, what was the first one we did? Was Gungala our first? Was Gungala the first one or the second one?
I think
one?
It may have been, yes.
In Gungala, she sort of spends most of the movie just watching the white people who've come to look for her.
Yes, these strange aliens that have entered
the
world.
Yeah, just watching them from a distance. And that's pretty much what she does here, as well as communing with the animals, courtesy of a great deal of stock footage. So, also appearing in the film, so Ken Clark, who we've mentioned a lot, and he's another actor where I'd love to find some interviews with him, but I haven't found anything really. And he passed away, he was in his 80s, he died back in 2009, living back in America.
I think there have been some interviews with him, but I'll be honest, I haven't been able to lay hand on them.
Okay. Yeah, you'd think he would have been sort of prime video watchdog material or something. You know, there were enough people interested in cult Italian films by the early 2000s to have tracked him down. But there's not that much out there about him, which is a shame. He, of course, as well as all the great Eurospy films and stuff, he's in Mario Bava's Road to Fort Bravo?
Road to Fort Alamo.
Alamo. Bravo. Alamo. Road to Fort Alamo. I should know that because I've just recorded a commentary for that one. Good grief. Yes. Which, by the way, I still don't know it. If anyone wonders why that hasn't come out yet, all I know is that they're still doing the restoration because it had lots of vinegar syndrome, apparently, the negative. But yeah, so he's in that and loads of cool stuff. So yeah, I'd love to read some things, or maybe you think people could have shot some videos of him or something, but
there are some. I just haven't been able to watch them yet. There's a
I see.
About a 40-minute interview with Ken Clark that I located on Vimeo.
Okay.
I'll send you the link.
Yes, we'll stick it in the I'll stick it in the show notes.
And then there are some other shorter interview pieces with him as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I think good. That Robert Monell actually may have published or republished an interview with Ken Clark done by Steve Fenton several years back, and it's one that part of the fascination with Ken Clark is there he kind of straddles both some of the American cult film interest because of his role in the Giant Leeches and the Italian European exploitation fans dreams as well, because of all the work he did in Italy. And so there's always been a lot of interest in him, even after the his retirement. I mean, he was in things like 12 to the Moon, which is kind of a cheesy science fiction film in 1960, and also the Giant Leeches before jaunting off to Italy. And so what we have is a guy who was in, Love Me Tender with Elvis, and, Agent 077, Mission Bloody Mary and from the Orient with Fury, and a Jungle Girl film, and a movie, a Western with James Garner. So there's a lot to talk to this guy about. And I'm, there's some on-camera interviews with him. I just need to sit down and watch them all, because he's obviously had a very fascinating career, and it's one of those guys who you look at his just the movies he was in, and you're like, man, this guy's got some stories to tell. I hope he told them.
Oh, cool. I obviously just was looking with my eyes closed because I didn't find anything, but that's really good. Okay, well, we'll try and link to some of that in the show notes. It'd be interesting to see what he has to say. So a couple of other cast members, just to want to briefly mention that this whole group of people who are heading into the jungle, amongst whom is the character of Groda, who is part of the sort of business interests, I think part of the same family. I think he's related somehow to Tarzana, played by an actor called Franco Rossell, who had over 100 credits. He's in pretty much every Italian cult film that you can think of. Loads of stuff that we would have come across over the years. He's in, of course, Antonio Margheriti's Ming Ragazzi, the great comedy that he made in Hong Kong, which I'm sure you're a big fan of. Hercules, also known as Hercules versus Karate, or Hercules versus Kung Fu. Yeah, he's in that.
More to the point, he was in Eric the Conqueror film. For Bava.
He's the priest in Seven Deaths in the Cat's Eye.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and he's in quite sort of quality stuff as well, like the Valachi Papers.
Let's skip over Sabata. Come on.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Sabata. Naked Girl Murdered in the Park. I know that's one of your favorites.
Actually, yeah, it's one of those films directed by a director that I don't have a lot of love for, but I really do enjoy that one, whereas a lot of people kind of look down their nose at it, but I really do like that film.
Yeah. And of course, in this film, in Tarzana, there's a chimp, and he also appeared in Mr. Super Invisible.
Yes, he did.
Where,
God save me.
Famously, there was a very notable chimp.
Unnoticeable, depending on how you're willing to discuss the invisibility of such a creature, yes.
He also briefly appears in A Quiet Place to Kill, or A Nice Place to Kill, whichever one it is, that's got Ornella Muti in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the customers buying pornography from them in that film.
Yes.
So ups and downs. But yeah, really interesting. Just, again, long career. I don't know anything about him. I've looked around a bit, but he just did loads of films. He's in Eric the Conqueror as well, actually. So
yeah, and Wild Wild Planet and War Between Planets. Yeah.
Ah, yes, of course. And then he has a sidekick called Fred, who is basically just a sleaze bag. And he is the character that we assume by the end of the film is going to fall in quicksand.
he is the obvious sleazebag bad guy, yeah.
That's going to go into the quicksand. And he was in, again, with Margheriti, he was in Web of the Spider.
Mm-hmm. He had a prominent role in Web of the Spider, very memorable.
Yeah. He's in loads of westerns, which you may be more familiar with than
I
am. You've seen more
Blind
of those.
Blind Man and Sartana Kills Them All. Oh yeah, he was in just tons of them. He was in The Mercenary, which I think is one of my favorite of Sergio Corbucci's westerns. Just a great film, and The Great Silence as well. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, and he goes back to things like Hercules in the Haunted World and Eric the Conqueror.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in Luana.
Exactly.
So
Let's not forget that he had his skin slightly darkened to play a character in Luana.
He's been to the jungle before. Oh yes, he played one of the African characters, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear. Let's quickly move on.
Let's move forward from that. Yes.
Different times, everybody. Different times. I mean, he was in The Visitor, which you know.
Oh, did we say his name? Raf. You should take a shot at it.
Raf Baldassare.
There you go.
Yeah. Probably.
But yeah, he was almost in 100 films, and I think it's fascinating that we've already seen him in our conversation about Luigi Cozzi's Hercules films.
Yeah, he's in both of those.
Playing different characters.
Different characters. So there's a pretty seasoned cast. Oh, and one last person to mention. There's a guy called Lars, who's also part of their crew, and he's played by Furio Meniconi, who was the king of the aliens in The Snow Devils.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Just wanted to mention that there. Anyway, okay, so that's everybody. Shall we get down to the plot, such as it is? I mean, I think basically...
I think at this point, if you've listened to the three previous episodes that we've done in this subgenre, then the plot's not going to be much of a shock. So,
no, although there's kind of a slightly interesting twist, I guess.
Yeah, so
looking around to try and find anybody who'd done any kind of review that was more than two sentences, I found a blog called The Spinning Image, and they've actually done a really good article on the film.
Okay.
So I'll link to this one in the show notes. So it gives a pretty good summary. Orphaned after a plane crash in Africa, topless jungle queen Tarzana lives happily with her animal friends, unaware that back in swinging London, her wealthy grandfather, Lord Donovan, is determined to bring her home. And this is because I think his son died in the plane crash, and he needs to find the heir to his fortune. So he gets his two employees, who are also somehow related to him. Groda is like a nephew or something. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, he sends Doris and Groda off to the jungle. Do they actually say what country we're in? I can't remember.
They've gotten this piece of information from Nairobi. So we're talking about Kenya.
Oh, yeah, we're in Kenya. Yeah, you're right. That's right. There's a clue. That's right. I remember now. Ken Clark, Glenn Shipper, the white hunter who goes out and bags rhinos and hippos for the zoos all around the world. And he has reported finding a plane that's crashed 15 years earlier. And they think this must be evidence of what happened. So Lord Donovan wants to find out what happened to his son. So he wants them to go out and find this plane crash and see whether there's any evidence as to what happened to the girl.
Yep.
So they head off to Kenya. Doris hires rugged adventurer Glenn Shipper to lead a well-armed search party. While the safari team explore the jungle, tangling with wild beasts and hostile natives, including shooting a lion that turns out to have a collar.
Oh, in the stock footage, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the collar. Yeah. I love the fact that the collar is one of the clues in the film. This is pretty cool. The whole collar woven from grass, which is it's a pretty interesting little addition to this kind of story.
Yeah, because the whole time Groda, so as it says here, Groda aims to inherit her fortune. So Groda and his friend Fred. Groda wants the mission to fail so that he can inherit the money.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do find Tarzana, he wants to kill her anyway, because then he'll get the money for some reason. So he keeps saying, no, this can't be right. This must be something to do with the natives. And because Glenn Shipper has been living there for years, he says, no native ever made a collar for a lion. No native ever built a hut up a tree. Sort of all the sort of evidence that there must be a girl around where they are.
Yeah.
That can't just be one of the natives. They go to a jungle village, and they meet. They get invited to a party, basically. And there's just like loads of dancing and naked dancing. And one of the dancers is Beryl Cunningham, Kamala. And she tells Glenn, who speaks perfect jungle. Did you notice how fluent he was in jungle?
Yeah. He spouted whatever that was perfectly well.
Yeah. I might put a clip of that in.
Agasu, jambo kariska, matangolamba tiaku.
Masuku besi, Kamala.
Abari ikwani sahivi, taukuri indola.
Atsupa tegona.
Dubwana, Tarzana.
Tarzana?
Glenn Shipper speaking jungle language. So he communicates with Kamala. It's really funny because they set up camp by this village. And one night after Doris has already basically stripped off, and just like in one of the other films, maybe it was Luana, I can't remember, Fred is a peeping Tom and he's watching her from behind a tree, which is similar to what happened in the other movie.
I think it's terrible how many people in these films, they take advantage of the female character's willingness to maintain good grooming. It's yes. terrible.
I know. Anyway, so after Doris has put her clothes back on, and she's looking out the window of her tent, and she spots Kamala going into Glenn's tent, and she's, you know, she's already got the hots for Glenn, so she just assumes the worst. But of course, what is actually happening, because unlike in Samoa, where the hero turned out to be a scumbag, in this film, Glenn is a man of high moral fiber. And
which I have to admit was a shock.
I know. So there's nothing going on between him and Kamala at all, apart from fluent jungle. And
okay, there's a phrase that could be used as a double entendre. Yeah.
So he explains to the rest of the group that Kamala was once rescued by this white goddess, Tarzana, and she can take them to where that was. So off they go. And that then leads them further into the jungle. Meanwhile, Groda is plotting what he's going to do, and he's got Fred on his side. But Fred is just a horny, horrible man.
This is true.
Who, first of all, tries to assault Doris when she's having her naked waterfall shower. And then he tries to rape Kamala. Because all the time, Groda keeps saying, we can't trust Kamala. She's only a native. He's like super racist.
Yeah.
He just keeps slagging off the natives and saying they must be stupid. What do they know? Even though, you know, they know the jungle a hell of a lot better than he does.
Okay. Yeah. Which anybody with half a brain and a smidge less racism in their character would recognize this as obvious.
It's very colonial, this film. It feels like the script could have come out of the 30s rather than the 60s. But because he's the bad guy, as we sort of understand fairly early on that he is the bad guy, so it just makes us hate him all the more, basically. Eventually they're following Kamala, and they're getting closer and closer, and Tarzana, who has barely been in it apart from just watching them and running around topless and there's some great shots. I think they basically got one shot of their topless stunt double swinging from one tree to another tree on a vine.
Mm-hmm.
They managed to film it once, and then they just keep dropping it in. Because pretty much every time, it's the same shot.
I think you may be right. And the effectiveness of it, the first time you see it, it's pretty effective. I like it. But the repetition suddenly becomes, so that's really...
Except... because they clearly never went near an actual jungle. So they're crossing between the stock footage and the studio jungle.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they had to film somebody swinging from tree to tree, they just obviously went out to some sort of local forest to film it. But the trees are spread quite far apart. And I don't know, maybe it was autumn. There's not a lot of leaves. So the kind of forest that she's swinging from tree to tree in doesn't look anything like the forest that everyone else is in. So it's all a bit surreal.
Well, really. if we're gonna start talking about some of the stranger aspects of this film, I mean,
yeah, well, why not?
From the title, it's obvious that this is set itself up as a kind of gender flip of Tarzan. And since in the first few minutes we get this young lady, dear Femi, delivering a kind of version of the Weissmuller Tarzan yell.
Yes, she does do that.
So, you know, it's they're very much saying up front, hey, gender flip Tarzan. Apparently without all of the Tarzan on everybody else violence. But she rides an elephant, so we get that aspect of the, you know, the 1930s and 40s Tarzan movies thrown in there as well. The stock footage, some of the stock footage is well integrated, but you know, and some of it is just, you know, kind of there to ladle on what, you know, should be some kind of detail about, hey, no, really, we're in this place we're pretending to be. But I think it's funny that the whole thing about Tarzana being translated as like woman of mystery or something like that, which is like, no, you've just added an A to the end of Tarzan. We all know what this is.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that as the movie starts, we see these folks trek into the jungle in a Jeep and a minivan, you know, into the unknown. And there's a part of me, I was glad when we finally got them on foot, you know, in the obvious jungle sets to get them out of those vehicles, because there was a part of me that was wondering what the radio would pick up. But hey, I guess we're never going to find out.
Yeah, and they set up camp, and I'm sure it's the same camp set.
Oh yeah,
as we've seen now about four times.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree.
Yeah,
just talking about the print. I don't know that there's another print of this film out there, and that is very sad. Mainly because this one shows evidence of, like I said earlier, missing some stuff at a couple of the reel changes. Yeah. There's a really hard cut near the beginning when they go to talk to Glenn Shepherd and make him the $100,000 offer to be their guide into the jungle. So there's a hard cut there that seems like there might be some missing footage. And then there's a weirder one I wouldn't say weird, but it's obvious that there's a scene where Ken Clark's character and Doris, the character of Doris, are talking, and there's a snake, and then suddenly there's a hard cut and we're in another scene, and I think there's a missing sequence there that involved the snake in some way, and I don't know why it's gone, because I don't know that anybody would have shied away from any animal violence in this thing, but I just think it's at a real change and the footage got lost, and that is a real shame. That's definitely a sequence that you can tell should be in the movie and is gone because of a screwed up print. I think that it's very interesting that Tarzana's jungle yell, that Ertzat Weissmuller type yodel yell, is enough to calm the attacking tribes down later on in the movie. She just makes that she just rips that out there, and they suddenly panic and run off.
And it also it tells the elephants to stampede.
It all depends. There's so much nuance within that yell. There are so many things that can be communicated with that sound.
Well, I'd like to read another part of this spinning image review, which I think sums up quite nicely the relationship that she has with animals. It says, in a surreal note of semi-bestiality, all the animals seem to respond to Tarzana's sexiness. Elephants trumpet an equivalent of a wolf whistle as she saunters by, big cats swoon, and in the goofiest moment, her panting chimpanzee sidekick dissuades Tarzana from wearing clothes. And one smile from Femi turns the fiercest jungle predator into a purring kitten whom she nuzzles naked on a fur rug. Frankly, it is the most believable thing in the film.
Her charms are obvious. Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Yeah, so we're back to the whole looking for the orphan in the jungle thing again, who's potentially going to inherit a fortune. So we saw that in Luana, and we saw that in Gungala. I think it was basically the same, wasn't it? But yeah. Samoa was a bit different.
That was just a hunt through the jungle for diamonds.
Samoa was, it was just sort of coincidence that they bumped into a jungle girl, whereas here they're looking for her, and eventually, like you said, it's basically almost the end of the movie by the time they find her.
I know. We're like 20 minutes from wrapping everything up before they even know that she exists.
And the way that she's very scared of them, because she's seen Fred shoot, he shot a deer or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fred, I think it doesn't matter, people won't care if we give it away. Fred doesn't fall in quicksand.
Nope.
But he falls into the next best thing. But normally, again, it's, you know, normally you set these things up. You introduce something earlier in the film so that when it happens, it's not just out of the blue. But not in this movie, unless it was in a bit that was cut, because Fred is running along and then all of a sudden he just falls into a trap laced with sharpened bamboo and dies. But, you know, normally that would have been teased by, you know, we would have seen Tarzana jumping over that because she knows that it's dangerous or something. But no, he just falls in. So he's dead, but she's very scared of all that's left. By the time everyone's dead, except for Ken Clark and Doris, and they have cornered Tarzana, and she's to the point where she might jump off a cliff to get away from them. So, Rod, could you explain how what Doris does to communicate to Tarzana that she's going to be safe with them?
I'm trying to remember the details now. This is terrible.
There's two very important details.
Does she strip down?
She does.
That's right. Oh my god, that's right. She strips down to walk toward her as if, you know, this will display, I mean, you know, and maybe it does. This will display, you know, their lack of aggressiveness.
Because all we've seen that, although Doris doesn't know this, but it's not the first time that Tarzana has spied on Doris and looked at Doris's boobs, and then looked at her own boobs
and judged her own breasts as being not as worthy, I guess.
Yeah, and she also steals at one point she does somehow steal a top of Doris's, and that's when she's putting it on, and the monkey is telling her she shouldn't wear it. So she's become, like, seeing this other white woman has made her become self-conscious about her body. So Doris, she bonds with her by showing her that she also has breasts. And Glenn Shipper, of course, being the gentleman that he is, doesn't ogle or anything. He's very good.
Very nice.
I can't actually remember now, because these films have already blurred into one in my head. Does she go with them in the end? I think she does, doesn't she?
You know, I can't... Oh, my God, I can't remember.
What happened at the end? Oh, man.
Terrible. But yeah.
You'll just have to watch it and find out. Does, unlike some of the others where they just leave the jungle girl behind, she's not ready to come back to civilization. With this one, I think they do befriend her. I can't actually remember. Anyway, it's funny. But yeah, that's kind of it. I don't know what else there is we can say about this movie, about Tarzana, other than with all these things, as we generally say, that it's fun. Check it out.
It is. It is. It moves well. It's colorful and interesting enough. There are, if you have any inclination toward this bizarre subgenre, it's an entertaining example of it. I kind of like it a bit more than Samoa, mainly because this is an actual kind of Jungle Girl movie, whereas Samoa, don't get me wrong, the interest in Samoa is both in its female lead and in the fact that it is different enough from the other standard tales of this type to make it stand out in a way. But, you know, this is the classic Jungle Girl story done pretty well. It's not going to set anybody's world on fire, but it is a fun example.
Yeah. There's a review. There are only 7 reviews on the IMDb as well. So again, this is a film that's not been watched by many people. But there's a review from the year 2000 where they say about the chimp when she's trying on the clothes. Her pet chimp eyes her up and down, then shakes his head no, and she slips right back out of the jacket. This seems to be conclusive proof that the Darwinian theory is, after all, correct. So, yeah, it's these kind of extra little details, like the chimp that's been dubbed by a man that's got the eyes for Tarzana, which just make it quite entertaining. It's pretty funny. So there we go. That's Tarzana, and that is our whole season done. Now, Rod, normally when we've done our full seasons, we've ranked the films in order. I'm not sure I could do that this time with these four.
Yeah, I don't know that I could either, yeah. There's so much, and this, we talked about this a couple of episodes back, they are so much of a sameness that there's little to differentiate them unless you are examining them almost one right after the other in time where you're watching one, watching the next, and making notes about the differences between them, and you're kind of to differentiate between them is to, in a large way, kind of split hairs. You know, this one succeeds in this category, whereas that one doesn't, and vice versa, back and forth and back and forth, to the point where you realize, well, it's just the if you enjoy the genre, then almost all of them are going to be worth seeing, but they're not necessarily something that is going to appeal to everyone. And there aren't, and part of the joy is that they really kind of are very similar to each other. There's not a lot of variation that anybody tried to do, and you either kind of run with that or kind of throw up your hands and go, well, damn it, I've already seen this movie. It was under a different title. Yeah.
So we are done with Swinging Through the Jungle. Thank you, everybody, for coming with us on this great journey across the jungles of the world. We've been to many different countries and seen pretty much the same film in each of them.
To a large degree, this is true.
But it's been fun. So, yeah, we are done with this season, and we are, in fact, done for 2023. So I will say Merry Christmas to you all, and Buon Natale, as they might say in Italy, if they didn't speak Italian. But yeah, and happy Christmas to you as well, Rod. I hope you have a good one.
Oh, well, thank you. Merry Christmas to you, and a happy new year. I'm sure we will talk again before the end of December, but I don't think that it will be for public consumption. So have a good time, and hope everything goes well.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll be back in the new year with a new season. This time we are going to be looking towards comic books for inspiration. We're going to watch Italian comic book movies.
I'm looking forward to this because I have less facility. I've not seen as many of these as I thought I had, or I've seen them and the memories of them are very, very dim. So yeah, this is going to be good.
It's going to have, yeah, it'll be Diabolic, Satanic, Super Argo, Argo Man, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, lots of costumes, lots of masks, lots of total nonsense. It's going to be good.
Mystery men in Italy.
Yes, that's it. So yeah, thanks everybody. Do stay in touch with us in all the usual ways: email, Instagram, Twitter, and back other things probably.
Are there other ways that people can contact us? Oh my goodness! Oh, the email address. Yeah, yeah,
email address. That's right. WildWildPodcast@gmail.com. And thank you. With all that said, we will be back in the new year. Have a great rest of December, and thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
When we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.